They say the young men in the spring turn to thinking about what the girls have been thinking about all year. And that's what we're going to think about together this morning. I don't know if that's so true, though. I think the young men think about it more than they let on sometimes. There are so many things that I would like to go into this morning. The subject of fellow girl relations and love and courtship and marriage, all this, you know, where it began in the heart of God. He is a very original God, and he has lots of wonderful ideas, and this was one of the very special ones that originated in his heart. And he doesn't have a negative attitude toward it. In Scripture, whenever it speaks of marriage and speaks of these things, it's always with a note of joy. And yet I know that the emotions that come into different girls' hearts vary on the subject of marriage. Some just feel terribly excited and some feel very afraid because maybe they've never seen a marriage that functioned the way God meant it to function. And some girls rush headlong into marriage and others hold back and are fearful to enter into it. And yet I know that underneath any of these responses is, even if it's covered up sometimes, a God-given desire that we really would like to have this relationship with some wonderful Christian man, the right one. And I'd like to go into some things this morning that I think, first I'd like to go into some ways to assure that you'll miss the best in life and spoil your marriage if God gives it to you. Things that you can do to assure that that would happen. And then some things that will help you to find a life of increasing fulfillment in marriage when and if God brings it, and without it if that's his very best for you. There are a few that God calls to a single life, and we probably never will know for sure till we look back from glory whether that was really our calling. I mean, we probably always think, well, maybe next year the Lord will do it. But if God calls to a life of singleness, I've seen many, many single girls walking with Jesus Christ who are far happier than many, many married women I've counseled with. So let's look at some things. First of all, how we can assure to spoil our life and miss the best in life and be unfulfilled, whatever God has for us, and then how to find fulfillment. Fitting into God's plan, what does God say about fellow girl relations? Let's go briefly into the first two. You know, Romans 12:2 in the Philippians says, don't let the world around you squeeze you into its mold. And especially in this subject of girls relating to fellas, we have constant squeezing from the world. Everywhere from the funny papers to the TV ads to almost anything that we can look at and the relationships that we see around us. And the best way for us to miss God's best is to let the world squeeze us into its mold and base our lives on the false illusions and the false premises that the world bases its life on. And let me mention a few of those. For one thing, enthroning romantic love. The world takes God's gifts and makes them gods. And the world, if we let the world define love for us, then we're always going to be looking for some captivating experience that will knock us off our feet. And if it's really, well, you know that we've been taught from the time we heard Cinderella that big hero will come and just overwhelm us, and then we'll be overwhelmed the rest of our life. And if we want to, if this is what we're expecting, then we're going to be disillusioned when marriage comes, because what one of us ever has the same emotions all the time? And C.S. Lewis made the statement that romantic love may be the combustion that gets the marriage going, but a deeper kind of love is what keeps it running. And that same feeling of excitement will not be there every moment of every day. And I know many marriages that are unhappy because the girl doesn't have always that same feeling. And she thinks she must have chosen the wrong one. Now, another thing is to have an unrealistic ideal. Oh, will I ever find the man in my mind, the one who is my ideal? He might be just a dream. But still, he might be just around the corner waiting for me. The ideal that we tend to have in our mind is a perfect person. A man who would never even need us, really. And we know that there's only one perfect person. And if this is our ideal, we're going to be disillusioned because sooner or later we're going to be disappointed in the other person. Every person has certain major flaws of character, certain major faults, along with some very admirable points. And this having this unrealistic ideal, even down to the point of he has to be tall, dark, and handsome. And I met one young man who, when I was in college, that had a whole list of things. She even had to be a nurse and, a teacher and a musician. Oh, he had a lot of things. And I teased him that he was going to be like the young fellow who gradually found that he couldn't find that kind of girl. So he checked one list after another till finally he was singing, "I'm Dreaming of a White Christian." And this, of course, is not realistic. Although we want to have a godly person in mind, but even here, we can't expect that a fella, if God is going to give us a fella maybe 25 years old, we can't expect him to have the maturity of that man of God we so admire who's 50. I mean, he's had 25 years to grow. So we have to be realistic. God will give us, if he has someone for us, someone who will also need us. And it won't be someone that we can adore in every facet of life. And we better let the Lord take care of our unrealistic ideals. Another way to spoil our lives is to go along with this idea of the new morality. Armand Nicolai, who is the chief of the staff psychiatrist at Harvard, said that the new morality is really just the old morality under an old immorality under a new cloak. And they became very permissive at Harvard and let the women be in the dormitories 40 hours a week, or all kind. The rules were broken down. And it was not the ministers but the psychiatrists who first saw what this was doing and the damage it was doing to the personalities. So I think we have to be really careful that we don't let these lies about there being no moral absolutes and situation ethics, you know, it's all right, whatever, it's all right as long as it's loving in the situation, as long as it's for the good of the other person. Someone wrote that from England, I heard that they said that it's actually Christ-like to go to bed with a man you're not married to if it really meets his real needs at the time. Well, this is Satan's old lies under a new cloak. And we have to really guard ourselves against these wrong moral concepts. Because God's standard still is that sex is sacred and beautiful in marriage, but there's none outside of marriage, and there's no other standard. Another thing, if you want to spoil your life, just be sure to insist on your independence as a woman. This matter of 50-50. In your present relationships, work on trying to be like that. Stick up for your own rights. Don't be yielding to the other person. You can do it with your roommate. And that'll help to assure that when God does bring marriage, you'll have it well established in your thinking so that you won't be able to take your place. Take that old saying that people accept as scriptures and follow it, the saying that says God helps them that help themselves, and use it in trying to find a man. That'll help to spoil things. You'll almost be sure to maybe find someone. I don't think there's any gal, if she really tried, that couldn't find some man. But I think that we'll see later that this isn't the scriptural way. Not that we should run and hide in a cave and say, "Lord, send him up here," but it's not. It's God who works out these personal areas of our lives better than we can ourselves. Cultivate, too, the habit of self-seeking. They say that the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life could be defined as the desire to indulge, the desire to possess, the desire to impress. Cultivate these. Getting life to run around yourself. This is the basic way to assure that you're going to miss the best. You know, the problem in self-seeking is that we don't even really know what we want. Haven't you been wild about some guy, and then 2 years later you're so grateful that that wasn't the person for you? We don't know what we want. Ecclesiastes 6:12 says, "Who knows what is good for man the few days of his vain life which he passes as a shadow?" Only God knows. Self-seeking is very deceitful, and it's a law of human life that if we seek to save our lives for ourselves, that we're going to lose them, and if we give and direct out to give to God and others, we're going to save our lives. It's just a law. Now, Satan has a couple alternatives that he makes us think life holds. He makes us think that it's going my way and finding satisfaction, or going God's way and having frustrated desires. Have you ever gone through that struggle? Wanting to go your way because you knew that this was the only way you could be satisfied, and feeling that God's way would frustrate what you really want. And this is just reversed. There is no satisfaction apart from God's way. And in anything that we go out for on our own way, it may give us an enticing amount of pleasure at first, but the law of diminishing returns sets in. Whatever it may be where our way departs from God's, the satisfaction becomes less and less, and it ends in bondage. And these are a few ways that you can, if you want to spoil your life, you can just concentrate on these things. And of course, if you don't, then ask the Lord to deliver you from these attitudes. Now, God created us, and we mentioned that the whole idea of marriage and of fellas and girls and all the joys that accompany these things originated in the heart of God. And along with that, he gave us some rules. And he didn't give these rules to make life frustrating, but to make it better. I've told my son when we had a little VW, I said, "You know, honey, why did the people from the VW company, why did the manufacturer send that little book of rules along with it? Was it to make our ride worse?" And he knew, no. It may seem a little bit of a bother to note that I have to have it lubed ever so often, and I've got to have this done and that done. It'd be much easier just to forget that little book. But very soon, I wouldn't have any ride at all. Very soon, I'd be breaking down all the time. And the manufacturer sent the list of rules to make my ride better. And God gave us his moral precepts and his moral absolutes to make our lives better. And we better let him convince us of this way down inside, because it's a basis of true obedience. And his instructions work. For instance, he has given a definition of love that can counteract that idea that it has to be this romantic feeling all the time. If you're looking for love, God defines it. Look at 1 Corinthians 13. God gives many definitions of love, and he doesn't even use the Greek had three words for love: eros, which is sexual love; phileo, I believe it is, which is brotherly love; and agape, which is godly love. And God in the Word doesn't even use eros, which would be the equivalent of our romantic love. Not that it's wrong to have those feelings, but that is not what God commands. That is not what we are to want in life. Actually, I have found that I've had to search my heart, because in the natural, I would like a captivating, passionate love to come into my life that from then on. And I have decided I don't have room for two passions in my life. If I really want to be captivated by Jesus Christ, I have room for real love for a man also. And I have room for, the Lord describes great satisfaction in the physical realm and every way in the Song of Solomon, the beautiful picture of marriage. But I don't have room for that all-captivating thing that automatically excludes any other affection that could be that deep. And I think that we have to get our definition of love straight and find out and be realistic. We should go into marriage or be looking forward to marriage as an opportunity that we are going to be able to demonstrate 1 Corinthians 13 love that suffers long and is kind and doesn't seek its own. And if we're looking forward to it desiring to give, we're going to get far more back than if we look forward to it thinking what we're going to get out of it. Chastity, in place of the new morality. It's been said that many go a mile with Satan who only intended to go one step. And I don't know how many of you have heard the term psychological acceptance, but they say that if we in our minds go over and over a certain act or a certain situation, if we go over it long enough, then we will assure that if the opportunity comes our way, we will do the thing we've been thinking about. And we have to watch our thoughts and let God keep them pure. And here, even though outwardly we would never do the wrong thing we feel, yet our thoughts can be revolving around things that are not pure. And we are setting the stage for ourselves to do them. And God anyway says that to think it is the same as to do it in his sight. Many go a mile who only intended to go one. And I don't know if we realize the influence of the touch on a woman. A man is excited by just a look, but it is primarily the touch that really begins the feelings in a woman. 1 Corinthians 7:1 says it's good for a man not to touch a woman. And I don't know, we each have to prayerfully know what the course of action for us is as far as our relationships with fellows. There are times, of course, when God leads people for a period of time because they want to devote themselves more exclusively to a time of training, and of knowing him leads them to not date for a period of time. I'm not sure that, I think we just have to know that the Lord is leading us to do that, and then be sensitive when the Lord would want us to resume a more normal social life, but always being sensitive to the fact that we want to attend unto the Lord without distraction. But if we date, what are we going to do as far as physical contact? We better find out before the Lord. What course of action will enable me most to attend unto the Lord without distraction? And there's a whole sexual area of life that when marriage comes, it is rightfully cultivated. And a woman learns to respond more and more deeply in a sexual way to her husband. And the gratifications become more deep in the intimate, loving relationship as the years go by. But we can sometimes be cultivating too soon this area of life so that we heap problems upon ourselves. And we cultivate the longings and the desires and the sexual feelings to the degree that it becomes very hard for us to wait for marriage. It becomes very hard for us to attend unto the Lord without distraction and to obey him. And let's just be sensitive to the Lord and choose the course of action with fellows that will most be glorifying to the Lord. 1 Peter 1:14 and 15 in the Phillips. Look it up sometimes. People have talked much about the idea of the danger of repressing our sexual desires. And there is a danger here, I feel. I feel that to some girls, it makes them feel wrong to think that they even have any feelings like that at any time. They shouldn't be having those feelings. So they don't even admit they have them, but start pushing them down. And so they may be able to say, I never have a problem with fellas. And they may be consciously having no problem. But if it's just pushed down, it's going to come out in worse problems in other areas of life. And God doesn't ask us to repress. He has something else, though. For one thing, I feel that it's very helpful when we have the feelings, the sexual feelings, the longing, heart longings, whatever it may be, not to feel condemned at all for them, but to say, well, thank you, Lord, you made me a woman. You're not condemning me for the very feelings that you put there. You gave me the capacity to feel this way. But, Lord, it's not time yet to cultivate these feelings. So I turn them over to you and submit them to you. And we call it, now, Lord, you lead me in a path that I will be able to use these energies in other forms to help other people, to scrub that floor. This is called sublimation, in which the energy is, we're conscious that it's there. We're conscious that there's a desire now, and a strong desire sometimes, and it varies with the time of month for us, but that is not to be satisfied right now, so we consciously direct the energy into some other channel. And Billy Graham spoke once, and I was single at the time, and I was quite young, and I didn't understand what he meant when he said that the yielded sex life is the powerful Christian life. And you and I, as girls without husbands, if we approach this right, not repressing it, but thanking God for it and then redirecting the energy, can have a dynamic outreach for Christ, or a added source of energy to use in serving others. And sometimes even just doing some exercises, or going for a run or a walk, or getting with people when our desires threaten to become the dominant thing in our life. Just don't sit around alone thinking about it and cultivating it. And here I'd like to mention the problem of masturbation. I know of girls who have had this problem, and they have felt so condemned because they never dare breathe it to a soul, and they felt that they were the only ones in the world who would ever do such a thing. And terrible guilt feelings about it. Now, I know that there are times when there's a problem like this that has really taken hold of a person. They say that normally, as a child growing up, a child will somewhere along the line experiment a bit with this, and then because he has his emotional needs met, he will have a sense that this is not a worthy way to act, and so he'll just stop. But there are times when, maybe especially when a person has no love satisfactions on the human level, maybe in the family, that this will become a consuming thing in their life. And then when they come to know the Lord, they feel very condemned about it. Now, I'd like to say something. This is one problem, or one aspect of sex that God is not real specific on. He says no adultery, no fornication. But there's only one time when we could even directly mentions this, and there he condemned the man because he was refusing to bear seed for his brother, take the wife and bear seed, because he wanted only his name to be carried on. And so he spilled his seed upon the ground. And God condemned him because he was refusing to do what God had said as far as what a brother's responsibility was to carry on the name of the brother should he die without children. But so I think that we have to be careful how we deal with someone with this problem. The person senses this is not a worthy way to act. And although Scripture does not say, thou shalt not, yet Scripture, yet this whole thing seems to me to not go along with the command, thou shalt not, flee youthly lusts. I mean, and the idea of attending to the Lord without distraction, because usually the person who does this extensively also has thoughts that go along with it that are not pure, imaginations that are not spiritual. But I think that we sometimes have to be careful how we help someone. I take the illustration, sometimes a person wants to give up smoking, and the more they concentrate upon that problem, the more they have a drive to do it. Whereas if they can learn to, maybe they even want to give up smoking for fear of what people would think. Wrong motive. But often, if they can cultivate their walk with the Lord, and if they go on and know the Lord better, and as their needs are met more with a relationship with Christians, getting involved with people and getting involved with God, the compulsive drive to smoke will more and more be taken away, till the point will be reached where they can cut it off. And there have been times when people with that problem, I have told them, look, forget about the cigarettes for now. God does not say, thou shalt not smoke. Although he does say, you know, our body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. But maybe some people's overeating is just as harmful to their body as your smoking. But Don't let your whole life be centered around that one problem. Start to cultivate life as God meant it to be, and your love relationship with the Lord. And the problems, well, the need will be met on a different basis, and then the time will come when this can be conquered. But we can make people feel very condemned for things that they are doing that are no worse, and doesn't mean that they're right, but no worse than the pride in my heart in thinking I'm better than they because I don't do that. We just have to be very careful in how we help people. But the problem with masturbation is that the person often feels completely abnormal and as if no one else could ever do this and feels so condemned they could never gain victory over anything in that situation. I didn't mean to spend so much time there, but another thing to remember, that God forbids an unequal yoke with unbelievers. 2 Corinthians 6:14. And in our praying about marriage, I feel we should remember we don't want a non-committed Christian either if we're really sold out to the Lord. And it's not ideal to have a Christian who is not walking with the Lord to the degree that you are, because he is going to have to take the spiritual leadership in the family. And if a couple feels that a relationship is of God, but it's unequal in that way, maybe time will change things. Spiritual growth isn't a matter of how many years. And a lot of growth can take place in a year or two, but let's beware of being in a hurry. And then we have to, I think that basically God asks for commitment. Commitment of this whole area of life to God, once for all and then daily, and then every time it comes up. Like sometimes they would announce engagements around the Glen here, and it'd be such a beautiful story, you know, and I knew that there were girls that would feel, oh, won't it ever happen to me? It comes so directly to mind in a time like that. And the thought came to me on Psalm 84:11, isn't it? Is it 84? That no good thing does the Lord withhold from them that walk uprightly. God is in the habit, and he has committed himself, that he does not withhold any good thing from us if we're walking uprightly, all right? So it would not be good for me to have my engagement announced today, because it's not God's plan. And God isn't withholding anything good. And just to be thoroughly convinced of the fact that God's plan for us is good. It's better than we could dream up ourselves. And you might want to do a little study on this. The goodness of God and God's good plan for us. We couldn't imagine anything as good as God's plan. And so because of that, we can commit to our lives to him in respect to personal fulfillment. Have you consciously said, Lord, I want no fulfillment anywhere in the future that doesn't come from your hand? God is the source of every good gift, and I personally don't want anything that doesn't come from his hand. And that is commitment of our lives to him regarding personal fulfillment. Committing our lives to him regarding marriage in general. I had to come to the place as a single girl that I realized I felt God was calling me to be a missionary, and I knew that there were more girls going out than fellas, and I also knew that I was naturally more independent than some of the girls I knew around me. And maybe I could go. I didn't want to. But maybe God would ask me to go. Of course, it doesn't hurt if I'm dependent or independent. Maybe God. Maybe he would ask me to go single. If it were true, it would be his best plan. But I had to say to him, Lord, though it does not agree with the longings of my heart, you have my permission. For marriage or not marriage, because you love me. You know, dropping our dreams and ambition and preferences sounds grievous, just to drop them. But it doesn't sound grievous when you think you're dropping them into the loving hand of God, who's going to give back everything that's good and more than we could ask or think. So we have to commit our lives to God in respect to marriage. And commit specific interests. I suppose that every one of us has had a number of specific interests in different fellows. Have we committed them into God's hand? I remember I really was interested in one fellow at school. He seemed to me the most godly fellow in school. He's the only guy in the whole school that I knew of that didn't date because he felt that he didn't have time to do his studies and have time in the Word and serve the Lord and also date, so he didn't do it. And I really cared for him. But I had to commit that to God, knowing that if this was not God's will, he would bring something better. And then when Dean came into my life, before he had expressed his interest, I liked him. And I just couldn't help it. But I felt, here I go again. Now, God had used that other interest. God had really used it to deepen my heart and to make me cry out to God, I want to know you. I've got to know you. I got great big crying needs in here that have to be met. And you are more desirable than Stan. And I want to know you. And really, God used that interest to help me to deepen my relationship with God. But now I thought, oh, here I go again. And I'd feel condemned. They say if you have an interest, don't feed it, but don't fight it. Either thing concentrates upon the interest and makes us think and think about it, you know. So I was greatly helped by an illustration that came my way of open hands, letting my open hands represent an open heart. And whenever the feeling of being condemned because I did like Dean came into my heart, I said, now, Lord, I have my open hands before you, and they represent an open heart, and every desire of my heart is there, open before you. I refuse to hold any like this. They're open. And you can take away this desire if you want to. You can remove it, or you can alter it, or you can put another in its place. You can do anything you want to with my desires. So that I was committing this desire to God. And in this particular case, the Lord wanted it to become stronger and stronger. But he can do as he pleases if we have our open hands before him and commit our specific interests. We mentioned the idea, instead of our unrealistic ideals, have realistic qualifications. And remember that you want to be needed. And you will never find anyone but Christ that can be completely adored in every area of life. And be sure that your ideals are God-centered and that they're not status-centered. You want him to have a certain appearance because then you would be able to glory more in how lovely a couple you made. See, there's so many subtle things. We want him to be a certain height because it's just accepted, you know, that he be a head taller or at least a little bit taller. We can have requirements that are rooted in our desire for human approval of our status and our appearance and our performance. And we better just watch out here. We may miss the very best husband that we could ever have because the color of his eyes are wrong. Now, most of us will love blue or brown eyes if they got the right framework around them, but you know what I mean. Let's be sure that we leave the details in God's hands. Now, let's be committed to God, too, in respect to God's working and God's timing. And here, scriptures often use the word wait. And there are more mistakes made in marriage because they just could not wait. In fact, they say if you feel that you cannot live without another person, Jim Wright counsels young people, if you feel you can't live without him, then wait until you know you can live without him with God before you'd ever make a commitment, before you'd ever marry him. See, we want to be sure that we wait, whatever the reason is that God might want us to wait, that we wait his timing. And he can make it clear. And God once in a while leads in a quick courtship and a quick marriage, but let's be awfully careful that it's not our human desires running ahead of God. Psalm 37 is so good on waiting. And Isaiah 30:18, the Lord's waiting so he can be gracious to us. He's not waiting to be mean. And Psalm 62:1 has been great to me in the Moffat. It says, leave it all quietly to God, my soul. My rescue comes from him alone. We don't have to rush into marriage. Did you ever stop to think, and it just hit me anew this week, I've got the greatest that life can offer. And I've got the best love that life can offer. And I am not going to long for marriage out of emptiness, as though I need it to be a complete person, because I am complete in Christ. Now, of course, there are needs and longings and many areas of life that marriage brings a beautiful human fulfillment. But I personally will not, I feel we have to be open to whatever God would want to do to give fulfillment on the human level, but not grasping it. And we'll go in a little bit into a few things about how we can cultivate this attitude. Did you ever hear the little poem that says, "With thoughtless and impatient hands we tangle up the plans the Lord hath wrought. And when we cry in pain, he says, 'Be quiet, dear, while I untie the knot.'" How many girls have rushed into an engagement and caused untold heartache to both her and her fiancé later because they had to break it? Not that God never allows this to happen and uses it for growth in both people. And sometimes it may have been, for some reasons we don't know, God's ideal plan for those people to go through that. But how often do we rush and then get knots in our lives that God graciously unties, but sometimes it takes a long time. You know, God knows the end from the beginning. He sees that whole picture of your life laying out there, and you don't. You don't know what you're going to face or what you're going to need. Isaiah 46, 9 and 10. From ancient times, he sees the things that are not yet done, and he says, "My counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure." God has a loving purpose for you and me. He has an ideal plan. And he's God. His counsel is going to stand. Only we can make a mistake with our lives. No person can. No girl can come in and snatch up the man that God would ideally have for you because you were sensitive to God's timing and waiting. Well, many things. It's wonderful to know that our lives are in the hand of a sovereign God who is limitless in his power. Just read Jeremiah 32:17. Now, then we have to commit back to God even the loves that he gives and the relationships that he gives. When he brings that love into our lives, that still is no time for us to hold on to that love like this. Did you know that? We lose whatever we grasp. We hold too tightly and the love becomes squeezed and doesn't become as beautiful. And if we commit those loves back to God, trusting the daily working of them to God, trusting God's plan, then God remains the focal point in our life. And remember Genesis 22, Abraham had to give Isaac back to God. God gave him back to Isaac again, but in Abraham's heart, he was no longer an idol or a threatening idol. Psalm 73, 25 and 26. I'm very grateful that God began to teach me some of these things before I even knew Dean. And when Dean and Jean first asked Mary and I out, we were overwhelmed. We couldn't believe that they would do this. And we knew it was only one date, but wasn't the Lord good to give us this lovely opportunity? They hadn't dated anyone in school, you know. They had made a covenant. They were going to forget the women because they always liked the same girl and always got in disagreements about this. But so they hadn't asked anyone out, and we knew that, well, this was just a tremendous blessing. And we were walking home to the bus there in Minneapolis, Judy. We had to go out toward Anoka. And on the way to the bus line from school, Mary and I were talking, and then we were reminded, yes, the Lord might bring beautiful, lovely things into our lives, but he always had to be our first love. And the scripture that came back to mind was one that we had learned, Psalm 73, 25 and 26. "Whom have I in heaven but thee? And there's none upon earth that I desire beside thee." Lord, if it had to be a choice ever between you and anyone else, unquestionably it's you, because you are the most important person in my life. "My flesh and my heart faileth," and our hearts were failing for one reason then, and they've failed a million times since. "But God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever." Here is a lifelong love that will never be taken away. And if we keep our lives, even when he brings human loves in, if we keep our lives revolving primarily around the love of God, then even should we be separated from our loved one, the bottom of life or the focal point of life will not be gone. Now, I have a whole other message I would like to share with you. Cheer up. Because I feel that many of the things that we have been discussing have been problems in the area of fellow-girl relationships and a little bit of how to deal with them. But you know, there's something very basic. Oftentimes, problems appear in our life. I didn't even go through Proverbs sometimes and read the ways of the woman who was not too admirable, the woman who was out after the men, and the immoral woman. And we should choose none of her ways. And note how she had smooth, flattering talk around the men, and she would take men with her eyelids. Isn't it fun to flirt? I really enjoy flirting, but it's something I don't think is godly, because I am my brother's keeper. And even the way that we use our eyes can make it hard for our brothers to live undistracted lives toward the Lord. She was very free in touching fellows. And I've seen fine Christian girls not realize that they're letting themselves and they're leading fellows on, and they can make the fella have lust in their heart by being so free in touching them. And she was loud, drawing attention to herself. And she wore clothes that incited lust. And she may have had a major emphasis upon her physical body and her appearance. And you know, we can choose clothes. Billy Graham asked us once, do you dress to wow the men or to please the Lord? And you and I can go to a dress shop and find two dresses that both look stylish and both look good. And we could subtly know that that one is more revealing than it should be. I wonder if we say no to that and take the one that is attractive and glorifying to the Lord, but also considers the fact that our Christian brothers, even fine Christian men, strong men, have been taken by her, that even they can be made to lust in their heart. They see enough on the street, but if we within the Christian family are not careful not to reveal what shouldn't be revealed or accent the positive. I went back to that because that's another aspect of the problems that can exist in fellow girl relations. But really, sometimes we ourselves have problems, or others have tremendous problems. And at the root of it is not just a need to cut off the problem, but at the root, why are they acting this way? Because of needs that are not being met on a deeper level. And sometimes a girl has never had true love between her and a friend, even. And being involved with her as a friend, where she knows you care and where she cares, may be a step in freeing her from whatever her big problem is and making her see that this behavior is not acceptable, but being able to turn because she has some needs met on another level. And maybe sometimes relating to you will help her learn to relate to God in a way that her emotions are met. But I would like to suggest that ideally, and in the final analysis, there's only one who can meet all the needs of our heart. And in Isaiah 54, we read that our Maker is our husband. In Isaiah 62:5, we read that as the bridegroom rejoiceth over the bride, so shall thy God rejoice over you. You and I share the position of being the bride of Christ, the object of His love and desire. He is our husband. And God likes to take the beautiful relationships of life, and these are two of them, and then say, I am more than that. I am that to you and more. I'm that to you in the ideal form, the only ideal form you'll ever find, the only perfect form. So, you know, some girls and I here on the Glen one time made a list of reasons why we want a husband. Have you ever done that? Well, we had a reason for doing it. Why would we desire a husband? Ideally, now, not even just realistically, but ideally, why would we desire a husband? What needs would we wish that he could meet? There are a lot of obvious ones, you know. You know that little song about him coming along to take a hold of my hand? Or will I ever find I forget the words. Dorian sings it sometimes. It's real cute, but just this longing of having him, someone come along, take hold of our hand. And we, of course, found that the Lord holds our right hand. There's many times when I've stopped and said, Lord, I need someone to hold my hand and to love and reassure me. And I've got someone. You say, I, the Lord your God, do hold your hand, whispering to you, fear not, I will help you. Intimate relationship. So just one need could be someone to hold my hand, someone to express love to me in a tangible way. We listed a long list, and you know, my list ended longer than theirs because I was the only one that had been married, and I knew more lovely things that happen in marriage. I knew more of the ways, of the needs that I hadn't even been aware before I was married, that Dean would meet many things in my life, and I could accept them as an expression of God's love, and then they were wonderful. Well, let me just mention a few, and we won't have time to go into much of the scriptures on how he meets these needs, but you can think about it, and you can find scriptures, and you can talk with someone else and get more scriptures. We need someone to care for us and plan for us. Isn't it nice to know someone's thinking about us? Didn't it make you feel good? It did me when I saw that rose in the room when I went to my room. Someone thought. But planning and caring for us. 1 Peter 5:8 in Living Letter says you are his personal concern. Jeremiah 29:11 says, I know the thoughts I have towards you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope. His mind is filled with loving thoughts and plans toward us, to give us a future and a hope. We have someone planning for us. And it's a good, acceptable, perfect plan. It doesn't include just the easy things, just like in a wise marriage relationship. The husband is willing, even though she may not at the moment appreciate it, to point out things that need correcting, that they're not fitting for such a lovely woman that he married. And I was very fortunate. Once in a while, Dean would rebuke me in a harsh way, but usually he would say, you know, honey, you know that I think you're 99.9% perfect, but I think this needs working on. Now, your husband, when he gives, may not deal with you like that, because each person has different ways. But God does. God deals with us like that. And because he loves and plans for us, he also plans a trial now and then. He also plans difficult things because he wants to work for our perfect good. But he is planning in love the very best for our eternal and temporal welfare. And we've got someone thinking about us. Have you ever stopped and let that soak in and just say, thank you, Lord. I would like a husband because I want to be planned for, but you are my husband and you are planning for me. Let him meet your emotional needs. We have a need to settle down, a nesting instinct. And even more than in a place, we'd like to settle down with a person. Now, isn't that true? Psalm 91:1-2 speaks of the Lord as our dwelling place. And a translation that a godly pastor in the Philippines gave, it's been such a help to me. It says, he that settles down in the hiding place of the strongest strong one, possessor of heaven and earth, shall abide under the all-protecting shade of the all-sufficient God who is enough. I will say of the Lord, my everlasting Redeemer who promises and keeps his word, he is my high place of hope, my fort castle. In him will I trust. Wouldn't you like to live in a castle all the time? Well, we've got one to live in. He is our castle. He is our settling down place. And I came across a little poem in Decision Magazine by Sidney Lanier that was written after evidently he observed a marsh and a little marsh hen flying around. And he said, as the marsh hen secretly builds on the watery sod, behold, I will build me a nest on the greatness of God. By so many roots as the marsh grants, grass sinks in the sod, I will hardly lay me a hold on the greatness of God. We have a nesting place. We need someone to give the future substance, to help in our decisions. We feel sometimes sort of uncertain and groping and unsettled, and we feel that we could take anything if we had a loved one to share it with us. Well, you know, you can find promises that he is with you. He will guide you. What more could you ask than the presence of this wonderful person? And if God gives marriage, it won't be as perfect, although it will bring many joys. but you will still need God also to give the substance to the future. I came across a poem that said, I said to the man that stood at the gate of the year, give me a light that I may tread safely into the unknown. And he replied, go out in the darkness and put your hand into the hand of God. This shall be to you better than light and safer than a known way. And it goes on to say that I went out and finding the hand of God, I trod gladly into the night. We have someone to give certainty to the future. Do we really let him? We need to feel acceptable as a person. We need a sense of identity. And you know that the natural sense of identity in our country is really a lot built around that Mrs. in front of our name. We want to, the Mrs. in front of the name, we sort of feel, gives others the impression that someone wanted us. We were desired. And it's not always true, by the way. A lot of people wish they didn't have that Mrs. there. But we do. The Lord has chosen to call us by His name. I've called you by my name. And in your inner heart relationships to God, do you let that really mean something to you? We're His beloved and His bride. We've got a better degree than the MRS. And we need someone to adore. Now, there really is a longing in our hearts to worship and adore someone. That's why I think people that don't know Christ, so many of them do enthrone romantic love and do have this ideal of someone coming into their life that they can just adore, period. And when God gives us someone, if that's His plan, He will give us someone that we can basically respect and that there will be many things that we can really admire about them, and then others that we can't because they're not perfect. But here is the one person that have you ever got before Him and just lifted your heart in adoration. Now let me tell you something. You can't sit down and decide I'm going to adore Him. You know how you've got to do it? Got to take a good look. Just like that sunset. You don't go out there and think, I'm going to adore sunsets. You don't sit in the room and think, I'm going to adore that sunset that's happening. No, you go out and look at it and oh, it just does something to your heart. And as we take a good look at the Lord, then our hearts learn to respond in adoration, and there's no more beautiful human emotion than this freedom and delight of adoring the Lord and worshiping Him. Take a psalm like Psalm 45 or Psalm 145, or you may have a better one for you. But like Psalm 45 goes through to show that He's altogether, He's fairer than any human person. He's gracious. How do you like to be around a person whose words are gracious? Isn't it wonderful? Just like soothing oil on your heart. And it speaks of His might and His glory and His majesty and His victory. He can defeat any enemy. Don't you like a champion to fight your battles for you? And it goes on to take things that we so value, like beauty and gladness and fragrance and gold, things that are so valuable, and says, well, I'm just using the best things I know on earth to describe Him who's even better than these things. Have you ever taken time to just look at Him and then just say, oh, thank you, Lord, You are my beloved, I'm Yours. And take a song like the one over there, Loved with Everlasting Love, and just have a little time of loving the Lord and enjoying His love. We need someone to fill our love longings, and only He can do it. And C.S. Lewis made a statement that God calls us, His higher creatures, to a union with Himself and with one another that has in it an ecstasy of love and delight, compared with which the most ecstatic love, the most rapturous love between man and woman here on earth is mere milk and water. We have the best. We have the greatest love we'll ever have. Are we really letting Him love us? And are we loving Him back? So that then we can love others too. And in these involvements, first with God and then with others, we will be setting the groundwork for a happy life of fulfillment in marriage when He brings it and if it's His best plan for us. And a life of fulfillment outside of marriage should that be His very best for us? You can't lose. Tozer, in the book Pursuit of God, and by the way, that book makes me so hungry for God every time I read a chapter. Pursuit of God by Tozer. And in one chapter he says, God is so vastly wonderful, so utterly and completely delightful, that He can, without anything other than Himself, meet and overflow the deepest demands of our total nature, mysterious and deep though that nature is. There are many things that God says in His Word that as we fit into them, into His commands, to commit and to wait and to abstain from fornication, and all these things, they make our lives more full. But the basis of the whole thing is to love God with all our heart. And how can we love Him? By letting Him love us. We love Him because He first loved us. And if we're doing this, then we have the greatest life can offer. And when and if God brings a husband into our life, we'll be prepared to accept it as icing on the cake. And it will be glorious, because God means marriage to be great. It will not, life will still be full of joys and trials. Life will still have problems, but it will be wonderful in God's plan. But let's prepare now, so that whatever God's plan for us is, we will know a completeness and a fulfillment that comes from Him alone.